all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And he is welcoming you back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for a Monday, April 17th. Aaron Zommers and Kristen Lyerly are both here as well. Kristen, you had a good weekend? I don't know if I asked. I know you're watching the nice snow weekend. Come down.
Yeah, I delivered a couple babies, had some good conversations. It's been nice.
I think that you were, I think I asked, and then at about that time, at that very moment, I started seeing the snowfall reports. I think I interrupted
That's
with
we
you
got
like,
distracted.
What? And that because a couple of new ones have come in since then. Black River Falls has come in at 15 inches. Bangor at 14 inches, Melrose at 14 inches, Loyal at 13, all still trailing Sparta at 16 inches, and Neillsville is our leader in the clubhouse, 19 inches of snow overnight.
That's a lot of snow, especially in April.
Yes, it's no fun whatsoever for them. Coming up this hour, we will have Matt Rothschild from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign joining us, talking about the recently completed state Supreme Court race, a very expensive one, one that was dominated by outside groups, and whether we still have to operate that way. So let's see. We were supposed to tell you all about the start of the Dominion defamation trial against Fox, quote unquote, news. And so I wanted to share just for a minute a little excerpt, and then I'll get Kristen and Aaron's comments on this, about comments that were made by media critic Oliver Darcy in the Reliable Sources newsletter, because I just thought it was so good. So it's a little edited for length here, but I think he does a better job than I can of laying out what's at stake in this Fox News defamation trial. Oliver Darcy writes, "This is it. The media defamation trial of the century is on the precipice of kicking off in Wilmington, Delaware, Dominion Voting System's monster $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit. When I watched Fox News broadcast election lies in the aftermath of the 2020 election, never did I expect the network to be held accountable in a meaningful way." He goes on to write, "I've covered Fox News for a while now. I've watched thousands and thousands of hours of the right-wing channel's programming. I've seen its hosts over the years undermine public health, make gross anti-immigrant remarks, peddle lies and propaganda, and push deranged conspiracy theories that were once reserved for the right-wing's furthest fringes. The network has always seemed to find a way to sail through the controversy. Sometimes it has emerged even stronger and more emboldened than before, but this time it's different. This time the normal tricks the network turns to during times of crisis will not free it from trouble. Fox News is about to enter the true no-spin zone, where deception is strictly prohibited, where it is not in charge, and where its top executives and hosts like Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity cannot simply ignore a request for comment and resort to attacking the media on air. In this setting, where lies cannot be casually told and truth cannot be distorted beyond reality to fit a dishonest narrative, it will be fascinating to see how the network fares. If the pretrial hearings are any indicator, it won't be pretty. The case hasn't even started, and the presiding judge has already lost his patience with Fox's legal team and put them on notice. Perhaps the winds will shift for Fox when the judge gavels in the trial, but if they play out like the last few weeks of court has, Fox is in for a brutal ride." And it leads to this question. The trial is not starting today because of the chance of a last-minute settlement. Kristen, if there's a settlement instead of a trial, is the damage already done to Fox News, or does it remove, is something lost if you don't actually get a jury to convict them of defamation?
I kind of hope they don't get to settle, because I want to see this play out. You know, we've been having to, this is just my preference, like I'm no expert here, but boy, there's so much going on here, and it's just so it feels good to see them being held accountable for all of the badness. So a settlement would kind of brush it under the rug and just like let it pass by. I want to feel this.
Aaron?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that a settlement will make it a lot easier for them to brush it under the rug and keep broadcasting what they're saying and being like, yeah, don't even worry about that. It was no big deal. They just settled it. We're fine. Anyway, whatever the new lie is.
Well, here's the thing. It would be great to have them be adjudicated as liars, because right now places like, you know, Canada and other places, they don't put Fox News on the news tier because they say, look, it's proven. You guys are lying. You're not
it's
a news
entertainment.
Network. Right. Right. Now, here's the thing to keep in mind. While both of your answers, you know, kind of match mine at first, you have to keep one thing in mind. And I said this about Donald Trump as well. It only takes one juror to throw the whole thing's out of whack. And how does Fox News look if the jury is hung or can't come back and say that there was actual defamation? Fox News claims victory. Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson go on to say, see, everything we said was true, even though it wasn't. So that's the risk of going to trial. And so, yeah, you could have the settlement that lets Fox off, but a jury verdict could also let Fox off. So while we want to see what we think is going to happen, a jury trial where a jury looks at the evidence and says, yeah, you guys are monsters when it comes to calling yourself news, we don't know for sure that that's what happened. So we'll talk a bit more about this on the other side of the break. Mark's calling in as well to talk about our earlier discussion about judges overstepping their roles in areas, you know, like the abortion pill and frankly, you know, women's health care overall. So first, we're going to take a pause and then get the updated forecast from meteorologist Jennifer Fachitsky from Weatherology. Plus, then Matt Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign joins us at the bottom of the hour to talk about our broken system that we should not normalize. All that and more yet to come on this Monday on Up North News Radio.
I really can't stay. But baby, it's cold outside. Got to go. But baby, it's cold outside.
It just, I mean, it's not a Christmas tune, right? It's just a winter tune. It's what we needed to play, right?
It's not that cold outside.
Okay, but it's still, it talks about the snow falling. Go with me, Kristen. I've only got so many songs I can pick that aren't Christmas and talking about the weather coming down. And we did Winter Sleigh Wonderland. Ride. We did Sleigh Ride. We've done Winter Wonderland. And now hopefully we can move past all of this as we check the Wisconsin State forecast from Weatherology. I believe meteorologist Jennifer Fachitsky is back with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
Well, I'm fine because I'm not in Neillsville where they ended up with, 19 inches, Sparta with 16 inches. You know, I can handle, you know, 3-4 inches over here on Lake Wissota, but that was quite a doozy there. I think that's the technical term. Yes. Doozy.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I learn in school is doozy.
Well, thankfully the doozy has moved on. So, Jennifer, what do you want to tell us about the week?
Yeah, so it's just an interesting mix of everything across the state today. Looking at still a winter weather advisory until 10 a.m. for parts of the southern portions of the state, mainly around Madison into the southwest, but no advisories from Waukesha to the lakefront. The winter weather advisory areas look to be expecting about an inch of snowfall total today. Some areas already saw that, and that's kind of kicked out of the area, but some areas might still see up to an inch of snow possible, with windy conditions causing areas of blowing snow. So some locations might actually look like they got more areas of falling snow, but as it hasn't been the actual falling snow, just those snow drifts. More in the central parts of the state, Richland Center to Wausau, looking at a winter storm warning until about 10 a.m. around Richland Center until 1 p.m. for Wisconsin Rapids and Wausau, looking at 1 to 2 inches of snowfall possible today, and again, windy conditions causing areas of blowing snow and low visibility at times. Then to the west around Amory and Baldwin, looking at areas of patchy blowing snow just with those windy conditions. A lot of that snow has actually looks like that's pushed out of the area, and no advisories for them today. It does look like below average temperatures for everyone today as a cold front came through the area. Everyone should be in about the mid to upper 50s, and it looks like our warmest parts will actually be in the west central parts of the state around 40 degrees. Clear and sunny for everyone tomorrow, getting in the 50s in the south, and the mid to upper 40s for central and west central Wisconsin. About the same for temperatures for everyone on Wednesday, a little bit warmer in the south as the warm front pushes through the area in that area on Wednesday. It does look like a chance for rain showers essentially for everyone as well here, and that will continue as a chance on Thursday with overall some warmer temperatures coming in as well. Then Friday, a chance for rain in the south with some slightly cooler temperatures at or slightly below average for this time of the year, and then a chance for rain snow mix for the rest of the state in the morning before becoming all rain for the day Friday, with slightly cooler temperatures coming in to round out the work week as well.
I'm not hearing 90. So just so this week, no 90s?
Not quite. Just a little below.
Good. That was really unusual last week. Jennifer, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology. So let's pick up where we left off. We've been talking about, judges who were overstepping their bounds. Mark from the SAC is calling in. And Mark, how are you feeling? And thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks, guys. Yeah, and it's not hyperbolic, to talk about these judges, because let's remember that in this and in other states that we have politicians want to rewrite the entire Constitution. Hostility, I think, that they see in the expansion of our rights through amendment to the Constitution is breathtaking. I mean, that Hamilton warned, as he closed out the Federalist Papers, that there's enemies to the general national government in every possible shape. And these guys have all taken an oath to the Constitution itself. These are the same guys that want to rewrite our Constitution. I see in the amendments we've added to the Constitution, at least in the past, now have actually expanded our rights as far as voting rights. And of course, they've refused to extend the equal protection to women under the Constitution with the Equal Rights Amendment. But these guys are hostile to the Constitution itself. I mean, it's not just it's treacherous, traitorous Tom Tiffany. Because let's remember that guy was involved in the insurrection itself, and has been at least supportive of the insurrectionists to our Constitution. These guys that are rewriting history, rewriting the fact that the federal government actually has the right to write the laws as far as prescription drugs. I mean, as somebody who's currently receiving prescription drugs, what do they do if they decide the antibiotic I'm receiving is not something they want to have me receive? I mean, the very antibiotics are saving our lives. I mean, it's not just the drugs that they give women access to reproductive health care. It's everything else. And these guys are just hostile to an actual functioning democracy itself. I don't think I'm being hyperbolic.
I don't think you are either, Mark. I appreciate it so much. Thanks for chiming in here. Kristen, Mark's point is spot on about that. When conservatives talk about activist judges and such, what they're upset about is that through the years, rights have been expanded beyond first a bunch of white landowners, male landowners. And then, then it was you didn't have to be a landowner. Pretty soon you didn't have to be male or white. Pretty soon you didn't have to be male. And as those have expanded, too many people who used to have all the power think that power is a pie. And if somebody else gets a bigger piece, that theirs is smaller. Power is not a pie. There's opportunity out there, and we should expand that opportunity for others rather than restrict the right to vote, restrict the what you can do with your body, restrict access to the medications that you can get.
Yes, it's a bigger pie. We're just making the pie bigger so that everybody can have more pie. And it's changing everyone's roles. It's not just taking away from the folks who are in power, although that is happening, but it's shifting what we are responsible for. And really, once we embrace that diversity, it can be an incredibly beautiful thing. But they don't see it that way.
No, they see instead the opportunities to curtail rights, which our latest example comes out of Montana, which late last week put itself on the path to be the first state in the country to prohibit TikTok from operating within its borders. The bill would certainly face legal challenges, but could be headed to the governor soon, even though, as TikTok notes, there is no feasible plan for how you operationalize a ban on an app. How do you censor American voices, those people who still want to use TikTok? It's one thing to ban it on government devices. Who's ever in charge of the government can do that. But to say, none of you within our state boundaries can use TikTok, it's just like what I said in the last hour, that government's moving from the exam room to the bedroom. No, they're moving right to the phone in your hand wherever you are. And they want to control your speech that way.
It seems like so many of the things that they're doing are symbolic and just playing to their base to continue to perpetuate their power instead of actually looking at the things that people care about and that they're worried about and trying to solve some of those problems. There are plenty of problems in the world, folks. We're just not solving it. I don't know if you're familiar, but everybody is frustrated with their healthcare. We have the worst healthcare system in the civilized world, and we can't solve that. Our politicians can't put their energy into fixing that problem, but they want to ban TikTok? Come on, guys.
Well, you know, compare that to, say, where you are in Minnesota right now, where there's an update on the Minnesota legislative session is halfway through. Democrats have full control after the last election, so they have been passing major bills at a breakneck pace, according to Axios, with new laws on everything from affirming abortion rights to affirming and expanding voting rights. They still have a $17 billion surplus that they're going to invest into people and jobs, whereas Republicans in Wisconsin have been sitting on a $7 billion surplus and continue to until they can give more of it back in, you know, tax cuts and vouchers to the very wealthy. The difference from states like Montana and Wisconsin to states like Minnesota and Michigan now is so apparent and so illustrative that, Kristen, I think it does nothing but help progressives going into 2024 when they can see what they missed out on in 2023 compared to what other states are doing.
I sure hope so. Some of the programs that they are putting in place here in Minnesota are incredibly family friendly and really speak to what people are wanting to see and hear. And, you know, there's already been a brain drain since the Walker administration. We've lost so much business and youth and energy from Wisconsin to Minnesota. It's just going to continue to happen that way because of the policies that we're putting in place. We don't have people to take care of our elderly population, especially in rural areas where we desperately need certified nursing assistants and help in nursing homes and servers in our restaurants. Like the labor crisis is ridiculous. We're all feeling it, but we're losing that youth, that population, because they're going to places where they feel more supported and more welcome.
Now, every so often an issue comes up that does not, it is not partisan on its face and really comes down to the preferences of legislators and their constituents. For me, back in the day, it was the smoking ban. There was nothing, there were Democrats and Republicans on both sides who were quite passionate about it. The note on Minnesota says that, you know, among the things that haven't been done yet, because again, you're trying to reach bipartisan deals one way or the other, sports betting is one of them. And then the other is marijuana legalization, which I'm sure is going to get talked about a lot this week, what with Thursday being, you know, 420 day, which is a day when, you know, illegal pot advocates, you know, really become that much more vocal about what should change in Wisconsin. And so we'll mention it sometime between now and Thursday, but I'm going to pick your brain while you're here today. I'm somebody who has, you know, has never tried it. I just have never had any desire to. I like bourbon. That's my vice of choice, you know. but I also, again, completely see the folly of continuing to make this, you know, illegal based on a mindset from decades ago rather than what science tells us, that cigarettes are so much worse than marijuana. Why don't we flip the two, you know, if you really want to do a favor? So while, again, it's not my scene, I don't understand why we're still an island this way in Wisconsin. What's your own Dr. Lee perspective?
I completely agree with you. And I worry as a doctor about marijuana use because I see a lot of pregnant people and they have nausea and they smoke because they want it to treat their nausea. And it's just not safe in pregnancy. So as a doctor, I worry about marijuana use and I feel like we need more information and more education, but I don't think that that comes with regulation. Regulation is just punitive. And we know that it becomes a racial and socioeconomic issue at its core. So it's time. It's time for us to rethink how we look at marijuana legislation, and really we need to get in line with what our neighbors are doing.
And it's funny how sometimes we hear the states' rights crowd say, you know, just leave it to each state. And then there are other times where you can tell folks at the state level, conservatives at the state level, just want to punt it to the federal government and go, well, let them come up with something, you know, because
right.
They don't they want to take it on.
They want less government until they want more government.
Yes. Yeah. There is no better way to put it than that. So we're going to talk next about expensive election campaigns. You and I certainly have some experience with that. We will talk to Matt Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign about what can be done about that. And then Terry Bell will have three things to know to start off the week. But I really appreciate you being here for an hour to kick things off for us, Kristen. So have a really good start to the week. And then do you know about Hometown Health on Thursday?
Yeah. Last week we talked with a pediatric psychologist about what's going on with kids' mental health. This week we're going to focus on the LGBTQ population and see what's going on with those people.
All right. Thanks, Kristen. Have a great day.
You
we'll
too.
Be back. You're up north. It's
follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
I don't care too much for money. The money can buy me love, can buy me love.
No, but apparently it can buy you an election. So we're going to talk about that with Matt Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. A bit about the campaign just completed, the Clarence Thomas situation, but really to reaffirm the point that I've tried to make repeatedly, and that is don't normalize this. This system is not working the way it's intended, and we should not throw up our hands. We should continue working on ways to get toward what should be a more normal election environment. Matt Rothschild, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Pat. Did you get a lot of snow up north?
We got more than a little snow up north. We got, 3-4 inches here. And like I said, 15, 16 inches, not too far away from here in places like Neillsville and Loyal and Black River Falls. So yeah, we're a little winter wonderlandy up here. I'd like to avoid that, but I'm also glad it didn't happen, back on election day, because we want as many people out voting as possible. And we want their votes to count, Matt. We want the votes to count. Which is, it's tough to feel that way with so much outside money and influence. And this latest state Supreme Court race was a doozy, wasn't it?
It was. It was an obscene amount of money in our state for this Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Just for context, the past record spending in Wisconsin state Supreme Court races was $10 million. This time it's going to probably end up, when all the dimes are counted, at about $50 million. And this not only was a statewide record, but a national record, because the previous national record was set in Illinois at $15 million. So we tripled, more than tripled that. And the thing that I want people to take away from this is not to assume that, the Democrats are always going to be able to outrage the Republicans, because I think that's an anomaly. I mean, Ben Wickler did a tremendous job, don't get me wrong, with the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. But look, there are more multi-millionaires on the right and billionaires on the right than there are on the left. And I'm sure those folks are waking up saying, holy smokes, we got beat at our own game here in Wisconsin. We're not going to let that happen again. And even if Democrats could continue to outraise Republicans among the billionaire class, our elections aren't supposed to be dominated by billionaires. I mean, it shouldn't be a tug of war between a handful of billionaires on the right and a handful of billionaires on the left. In a real democracy, we'd all have an equal tug on the rope. And we just don't. I think everybody listening to this show, Pat, knows that. We just don't. And so, our TV screens, our phones, our computers were just splattered with mud, disgusting ads. And we need to get to a place where we have better politics than that.
Most certainly do. And I mean, there was another similarity back when, Barack Obama was first elected, that he had basically broken the mold on, how all kinds of small dollar donations could come in and make a difference. And yet the rules really didn't change much after that either. So it's one of those things where, now I know, during my time in the legislature, we did pass a campaign finance reform action for state Supreme Court races, which Republicans, completely nuked when they took over in 2011. But it's fair to say that both parties could do more work as each one takes power to clean things up. And so while the bar is set rather low in terms of expectations this year, we can at least advocate for things from our legislators or our members of Congress. If anybody out there had 5 minutes with their member of Congress or legislator, along with whatever their particular pet project is, if you could have them ask for something in those 5 minutes, what would you have them ask for?
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, who gets 5 minutes with their legislature, with their legislator, with their senator or congressperson, if you're not giving big bucks? I mean, you can't go knock on the door and have the door open wide all the time. But if you're one of those billionaires or multimillionaires who are giving the Democratic Party or Republican Party $20,000 or more, or giving the candidates for governor or Supreme Court $20,000, I'm sure doors are opening for you. But that's just a handful of people. They should be opening for all of us. So I do think campaign finance reform remains a crucial issue for us. And Senator Chris Larson, Democrat of Milwaukee, has been introducing a package of comprehensive campaign finance reform the last few sessions, and I'm looking forward to him reintroducing it in a month or two. One of the things he'd do is close what Republicans are now calling a loophole that Walker put in. It wasn't a loophole at all. It was the design, and that was to let super rich people give unlimited amounts to the political parties. Before 2015, when that rewrite was done, the limit was $10,000. So if you gave $10,000 to the Republican Party of Wisconsin, you couldn't give a dime to Scott Walker. Same thing on the Democratic side. But now you could give $20,000 to Evers or Michaels and give $2 million to the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, which can then turn around and give that money to their candidates. So it just makes a joke, and a bad joke at that, at the limits that we have set on individual contributions, which I think are already too high, because who's got $20,000 they can throw? So we've got to totally reduce the amount of money that super rich people can donate, and then close these kind of end arounds that limit, that people, super rich people, can give unlimited amounts to the parties or unlimited amounts to the outside groups. I mean, we had this one guy, Richard Eline, who lives in Lake Forest, Illinois, and the founder of the Uline Corporation with his wife. You know, he gave $4,075,000 to the outside group Fair Courts America, misnamed, by the way, to slander Protasiewicz. And then he also financed two other PACs that were spending about $2.5 million to slander Protasiewicz. Why should one individual be able to spend that much money to try to affect the outcome of our elections? That's just not right.
No, it's not. We're talking to Matt Rothschild from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. If you haven't picked it up yet, 12 Ways to Save Democracy in Wisconsin is the book. And I'd love to say we could take 12 different shows and go through these point by point, Matt, but you're retiring. What's up with that? Why would you leave? We have such a moment of need now for the guy leading the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign.
Well, the cat's out of the bag, I guess. Yeah, I'm retiring on July 1. I'm turning 65 in July, and I've been doing this work for 43 years and always said, you know, when I get to be 65, I'm going to retire like a normal person and sit on my porch and watch the goldfinches change color. So, that, you know, basically that's what I'm going
to
do.
You know what you get to become is my old colleague, John Erpenbach, who was a state senator until this past year. He loved to talk about when certain issues would come up. He'd say, my district is filled with, you know, nothing but little old ladies who got nothing better to do but vote. You know, they've got all this time, and you're going to have all this time where I sense you'll be sitting on the porch, but you're still going to be doing little advocacy work. It would be my hunch.
Well, it's going to be hard to shut me up, no doubt, Pat, because, you know, I love to talk and I love to get my opinions out. And part of it's catharsis, because I get so frustrated, as I'm sure you do and most of your listeners do, you know, reading the paper or watching the news and seeing awful things that people in power are doing. And we just want to scream. And so short of just screaming, what I usually do is try to get my thoughts down on computer and post them on Facebook or get them on our website at wisdc.org. And I imagine I'll just be doing that on Facebook after July 1st.
I bet you'll be doing it here on the radio too, and lots of other places. But before you leave Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, I assume you're going out with, either a dinner or a fundraiser or something here. Is there something that people can support?
Yeah, we have an annual celebration at the Luzier Family Heritage Center in Madison, in rural South Madison. And that event is May 10th. It starts at 6 o'clock. Angie Trudell Vasquez, the poet laureate of Madison, is going to be reading some poems. And I'm going to give a speech, just kind of a tour of the horizon, you know, where do things stand, not only for the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, but for democracy here in Wisconsin and actually democracy across the country. Because, you know, ever since Donald Trump came down that escalator, our democracy has been challenged in ways that I didn't even anticipate when I was planning on writing that book. You know, we have fundamental problems. We have economic inequality. We've got racism. We've got campaign finance problems. But we also have this problem of authoritarianism and white nationalism. So I'm going to give a speech about all those things, and then I'm going to give some hope. And, you know, the two biggest signs of hope, that really three biggest signs of hope I see, one just happened at the election with all the young people turning out to vote, which was tremendous. And the two other ones are the law firm Law Forward is just a tremendous new asset for the progressive pro-democracy movement in Wisconsin, leveling the legal playing field finally for us. And then, of course, there's civic media, which you're such a big part of, Pat. I mean, we have not had an ability on the pro-democracy side, on the progressive side, to contest ideas on the radio, on talk radio, as we finally are getting a chance to do now. And so those are a few great signs I see.
Well, it's one of those, it's listed in your book as well, of the ways to save democracy. One of them is save local media. And it's something that, you know, civic media had in mind starting the radio stations. It's something Courier Newsroom had in mind when it founded and created Up North News and all of our other state-based newsrooms out there, is that these things are still, just because a consultant tells you that your newsroom shouldn't be covering it, doesn't mean it's not important. You know, these things still matter, and you can't be afraid to talk about the things that matter.
And the problem is we just have news deserts now in patches all across Wisconsin where there's no really functional daily newspaper anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, the newspaper isn't printed there. There are no local reporters there. There's no local editor there. So it's really hard to follow what's going on locally with the newspaper, which is basically a shell or sometimes totally absent in places in Wisconsin. And that's why what you're doing, what civic media is doing, is so important.
I appreciate that very much. Let's look beyond state borders, because while it's not under the umbrella of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, I'm betting you can still fill in the listeners a bit about this situation with Clarence Thomas and, you know, the gifts essentially that he's allowed to be given without reporting them. Now, if you're on the highest court in the land, apparently they've decided they don't need ethics rules for whatever reason. I don't mean to ask it in such a direct way, but I mean, why should people care?
Well, we have one of the 9 Supreme Court justices with no ethical standards whatsoever. He's been basically benefiting from free, lavish vacations for decades from a super rich patron. And then the super rich patron also bought his mother's house, or the house he grew up in, and then refurbished it. And he didn't disclose that. I mean, this was a case of tremendous investigative reporting by ProPublica. And another reason why we need journalism. But look, if one of our Supreme Court justices is not obeying standard basic ethical guidelines, we got a real problem here. And I do think that, you know, the Judiciary Committee in the Senate should take a look at this. You know, I don't think Jim Jordan on the House side is going to take a look at this, but it's outrageous. Really is an outrageous ethical violation.
And again, the whole push that I make to not normalize things is, don't say that, well, we can't impeach a U.S. Supreme Court justice, or we can't investigate a U.S. Supreme Court justice, for the same reason that people say, well, we can't charge Donald Trump. We can't be charging an ex-president with a crime. Don't normalize this level of unaccountability in either current or former public officials, because we all should be playing by the same set of rules, whether it's campaign finance rules or, you know, ethics rules as well. We should all have to adhere to it, and nobody is above it.
Absolutely, Pat. I mean, this is accountability time. We need accountability. We really need accountability for Donald Trump. Otherwise, it makes a mockery of the things we've been taught since we were little kids, that we're a nation of laws, not of men, that no one's above the law. Well, here we had a president who was trying to overturn our democracy and was engaging in seditious conspiracy. A lot of people have been convicted of that already. Why not the guy at the top who led the charge? So definitely we need accountability for that, and we need to investigate Clarence Thomas too.
To learn more about the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, go to WISDC for Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, wisdc.org. And in there, you'll find no shortage of information about current events, but also learn more about Matt Rothschild and his pending retirement and ways that you can continue to support an organization that does so much good for holding people to account and informing all the rest of us. Matt, thank you so much for the visit. Appreciate it so much.
Pat, it's always a pleasure. Have a nice day.
All right. You're definitely going to have a home here, even from your porch. We will watch from your porch as you part some wisdom to us. So thanks again. Have a wonderful day. And when we come back, Terry Bell will have the three things that you should know to start the week from the Civic Media Newsroom. That's coming up right after this on Up North News Radio. All right, Terry Bell here, Civic Media News Director, joins us now from the Madison studio. Terry, how are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm well. How are you?
Depressed. Look at the stuff out there.
It's sloppy, it's icky. Yes, it's spring in Wisconsin. You get a little bit of everything.
Yeah, that you do. And I cautioned my wife, before she makes her 45-minute drive to work. I said, somebody's always got to be the last person to slide into a ditch every winter. Don't be that person.
Don't be the first person either. That's the person who annoys me.
Oh, yes. Just as badly. Yeah. Yep. And the tow truck drivers out there are just like, okay, who's it going to be? Who's going to be the last one? But I guess if we're going to start with the silver lining, there's nothing like half a foot to more than a foot of snow to put a damper on the wildfires that were, blazing away last week, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially in central Wisconsin, they'll take the precipitation for sure, and hopefully this will tamp down any wildfire threat for quite a while. It was so unseasonably warm and windy and dry, and that's the perfect storm for these wildfires. They finally put out the big Arcadia fire in Monroe County around Fort McCoy on Saturday, but when you tally it all up, there were at least 21 wildfires that burned another 2,800 acres. So we'll be talking close to, I think, 6,000 acres of land burned before it's all said and done. I looked around for an official final tally. I haven't seen one, but I'm guessing we're getting close. We'll be in the 6,000 acre neighborhood.
And I haven't seen any kind of, map pinpointing the fires, but I will say that driving around on Friday evening, it was a little bit hazy and you could definitely smell something. Oh, and yeah. I wouldn't be a bit surprised, given what a stiff south wind it was, that fire, well over an hour's drive away is what we were, getting a whiff of up there. It was impressive in the negative way.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. Absolutely, yeah.
And we're getting a whiff of those fires even as we're downtown watching the Chippewa River, flow over its banks and close roads and flood some parks.
They had some issues in Wausau last week too. With
flooding. Yeah, and it's almost like there's something about the climate, like there's, I don't know, a change going on or something, which takes us to Earth Day. That's going to be coming up this Saturday.
Yes.
And I'm sure folks will have a lot to say about that this week as well.
Yeah. Earth Day, founded right here in Wisconsin. And, it's maybe a little tricky to draw a straight line between fluky weather events and climate change, but with climate change comes more fluky weather events. So that's something that, we need to take seriously.
It is. And we will talk on Wednesday to, I think it's Wednesday, I want to make sure, State Assembly Rep Katrina Shanklin is going to be joining us. There you go. Just scroll down, Pat. It's right there. Yes, Katrina Shanklin will be joining us on Wednesday to talk about Earth Day and the environmental proposals by Governor Tony Evers that will be in there. So everything environmental will be is one of the first things we want you to know to start the week off. The other is this continuing punching down on trans kids, which I don't know if you saw Saturday Night Live over the weekend, but one of the cast members did a great, you know, every so often they kind of give a political speech under the guise of a comedy routine.
Sure.
And the point that she was making is that when you're attacking trans kids, you're attacking kids. You're attacking kids.
Well,
what
that's
are you
just
doing?
The thing, right? And I know people have strongly held opinions about this, but you know that's what it really comes down to, Pat. That's well said. You know, we're talking about kids who are struggling and reaching out to us for their help, and you know, how do we respond to that? I think that's terribly important.
We heard forever that legalizing same-sex marriages would be, you know, the downfall of society. No, it was never going to be, has not been, and has gotten along fine. So now apparently, you know, trans kids and drag shows are the new thing for, you know, culture warriors to, you know, try to say, well, that's going to be the end of civilization. Maybe it, none of that will happen if you actually try to keep our kids safe and try to give our kids a good education. But anyway, back to the kids. Our guest on Thursday, as Kristen Lyerly mentioned, is a pediatric psychologist who will talk about the impact that LGBTQ kids and young adults are feeling from all of this political punching down. I mean, just look earlier in this legislative session about the blocking any ban on so-called conversion therapy. So we'll be talking about that on Thursday. It's a topic that you'll be that we will all be following this week. And then, as I mentioned before, it's a 420 day coming up this week. So we'll have that discussion again about whether the legislature this year will be the time that they start to loosen the rules on legalizing marijuana.
There anecdotally seems to be a little bit of movement, at least in hearts and minds. I don't know if that's going to translate to votes yet, but the Marquette poll says 64% of registered voters in Wisconsin support legalizing marijuana. It still seems to be, at least recreational marijuana seems to be a partisan issue in Wisconsin. Although when it comes to medical marijuana, we are seeing some Republicans shifting on that. And I think as there's we hear more stories about people who are benefiting from medical marijuana, you will see, I think, over time, more people supporting it. Also, when it comes to recreational marijuana, we have to recognize, too, that Wisconsin, we've sort of painted ourselves in a corner in a bit, that we are a bit of an island in the upper Midwest when it comes to marijuana laws. And usually when that happens, the one state that's an outlier will have to get along with the others. You know,
and you lose all taxes, you lose all manner of tax revenue.
Exactly.
You
know? Yep, losing tax revenue, and you know, people are, you know, sending their business, you know, over borders, and I think that's something that's going to enter into the discussion more and more as this debate goes on.
Look, you have legislators who always want to say it's the taxes. You know, if your taxes are low, that's what attracts businesses. No, it's do you have a workforce? You have an educated workforce. Can they afford to live in this community where I might want to come? Do my female employees have the same rights as the male employees? And do they have access to the kinds of things they would have access to in other states? All of those things well ahead of a list of just tax policy alone, which is why you look for a more well-rounded view from our state legislators. But yeah, we'll talk about that this week too, is in terms of what is it that makes Wisconsin an island? And it's not just marijuana policy, but it's one thing that contributes to Wisconsin becoming essentially an economic island, losing out to the prosperity of our neighbors in some other states. So we'll have more than a couple of things for you to stay busy with this week, Terry.
Yeah, we already have a labor shortage in Wisconsin. So, you know, it's these factors like these that certainly may be driving that.
Yeah, exactly. Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director. Are you still in the closet of studio there with Aaron, or have you?
We
moved
are
over
still
to
on
the
University
studios?
Avenue. Right. We have not moved over to the plush new digs downtown yet, but you know, all things in their own time.
They'll get you there eventually. Oh, yeah. All right, Terry. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat.
Appreciate it. Have a great day, and all of you do that as well. Earl Ingram is next in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Stephanie Miller's up next in Madison. Todd Alba around the rest of the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.